Small Business and Startup Stories DSM features conversations with small business owners who share both their victories and failures on their path to success. Small Business and Startup Stories DSM is produced by the Greater Des Moines Partnership. More tips and resources are available at dsmpartnership.com/small business. I'm your host, Mike Caldwell.
Cornell Caesar, welcome to Startup Stories. Tell me about your background. How did you come to be an entrepreneur?
Sure. Yeah. So my background is predominantly in retail merchandising and packaged goods business development. Started my career. So I was a graduate of the University of Northern Iowa, Go Panthers.
Go Panthers.
And from there, I began my career at Target Corporation in Minneapolis in merchandising within health and beauty, essentially helping with inventory management, open to buy on how much inventory we bought for the Target chain of about 1,800 stores. And I was responsible for soap, actually. So who knew that Target spent $450 million a year in purchasing bar soap inventory, right? Not just bar soap, but soap inventory as a whole. So it was just, a high level of responsibility and cut my teeth on, that much accountability of dollars out of the gates. And from there to a team called Partnerships and Negotiations with Target, which was helping buyers, understand how to drive their profit and also maintain relationships with their supplier community. Those being businesses big and small, the Procter and Gamble's to the startups that launched, a year within that year. And so from there, I realized my passion was helping emerging brands kind of get their foot into the door and bring, their point of difference to the masses. And ultimately left Target to join a business called Sundial Brands. Shea Moisture was the master brand. It's a business founded by Liberian immigrants that were based out of New York. And played around with a few different brand ideas, a few different concepts, and ultimately brought Shea Moisture to the world by way of Target while I was in personal care and purchasing in soaps. Yeah. So left Target to help them build their brand and their distribution across the U.S. And was with them for about 5 years. And ultimately, they were acquired by Unilever. They, I believe, are the number two natural product brand behind Burt's Bees now. With those journeys, some of the things that stuck with me was the social impact good of a big corporation like Target, and then a leading brand such as Shea Moisture, an emerging brand that was really focused on supply chain social impact, but then also helping build a brand that had so much more beyond just this product, but also just understanding the power of retail and retail distribution to be able to be a force for good. And so they fed a lot of kind of the opportunity and the ideation around building Black and Bold where we are today.
I don't think most people understand how complex retail is. I actually worked on the supplier side to retailers, and it sounds so simple. Buy some product, put it on the shelf, keep it on the shelf and sell it. And yep. For anybody that gets in the business saying, I'm going to put a product on a shelf, I want to sell products to Hy-Vee because they're here in town, right? They're really good about working with entrepreneurs, or someone bigger like Target or Walmart, or I've got a client that works Bye Bye Baby. It's one of our lines, one of our store lines. It is immensely complex what it takes to manage a product category. And so having that experience puts you so far ahead of the people that are just learning it the hard way. And you've probably met a few of them that are just like, yeah, man, how do I get into Target? You've done it, right?
So how do I get into Target and the complexity of the blinders of not understanding that complexity, but right. Those that have made it into retail. And those are a lot of people that, that's how I kind of began my exposure to entrepreneurs, was those that, were getting their shot at Target.
Right.
And, phenomenal product, clearly something got them across the line. But now they're, in the big leagues, and they don't realize all of these kind of hidden costs or complexities of how they're benchmarked, or, you know, what their competitors that have been in the game for, you know, multiple years, and what they have coming down the pipeline that can, you know, help or hurt what, you know, said brand that just has, you know, a very proven idea or product. But how do you prepare for the long game when you step into that arena? It's very tricky.
And you chose a fiercely competitive product area to go into. I mean, quite honestly, you're taking on one of the iconic brands across the world and taking on, I mean, I know you don't like go bump heads directly, but Starbucks is a brand, right? I mean, they're a killer brand. And I'm curious if you could back up for us a little bit and tell us the story behind Black & Bold Coffee. How did you come up with the idea? I think you have a partner involved. Maybe you could just give us that backstory.
For sure, man. So the business Black & Bold was co-founded by my partner, Rod Johnson, who's my childhood best friend. We lived on the same street in Gary, Indiana. So we have a, you know, we joke around and say, you know, we kind of have an executive team that's been at it for over 20 years, just now around, you know, a formidable topic to bring life for other people to be a part of. And the ideation of Black & Bold really, you know, culminated from the conversations that Rod and I were having now as, you know, as adults and professionals and, you know, sharing each other with each other, you know, what was going on in our professional world. But also this commonality around like still wanting to, you know, make an impact, or what's going on in Gary, or how do we do this? You know, how do we do that, knowing that we have limited time and we still, you know, have our eye on the ball of being successful in our careers. And it ultimately went to how are we spending our money to impact the lack of time we may have in the short term to still have that good in the world that we valued. And you know, we knew we wanted to build something that was focused on domestic impact, supporting youth in need. It really became a matter of what vehicle will we build the business model around to do so. We had the background, Rod's background, you know, philanthropy, fundraising for higher education and healthcare. And then mine being, as I mentioned, with retail distro, it was a matter of, okay, well, what industry are we passionate about enough to see this all the way through for the long term? And we looked at our habits, and it automatically just aligned where, at least from a starting point, where we drink all this coffee, we drink all this tea. It's a part of our everyday so much that we don't even think about what goes into making this and the impact it has. Exactly. There you go. Cheers to that.
Cheers.
And so. Yeah, man. And so we looked into the industry and how viable is this space? Is this something that we can feel a personal calling to? And where's the opportunity gap from a product standpoint? Well, that was also for us from the angle we had, a no-brainer. We visit coffee shops. We're, you know, as consumers, coffee part of the coffee shop culture. We get it. We appreciate, you know, the experience of community in a coffee shop, as well as the product quality, the integrity of the product. You know, these business owners, entrepreneurs, how they put their all into that product. But then when you go to fill out a grocery list, you don't have those options. When you are online shopping, you know, on Amazon, you don't really have those options. You have some options, but it's not the same delicacy and quality that you get in an independent shop that you, you know, build that loyalty with the product for. And there's a reason behind that, the complexity of retail in itself, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, we can dive into that a little bit more later, but so the idea of Black & Bold came from, you know, how do we create accessibility to, you know, high end top tier coffee, make sure the price point is affordable and attainable still. It's going to be a reach, and it's intentional to be a reach because the quality is there, and the what's currently in retail and grocery is not where the buck stops. It's just where the everyday person has been accustomed to.
Right.
And so provide better accessibility to that, but then also allow those consumers to have an impact back into their community without having to change their everyday habits. Right. And so that was the overall ethos. And been at it for 2.5 years, man.
2.5 years. Wow.
Yeah.
So did either one of you have a background in roasting coffees or buying the beans or any of that?
No, man, not really. It was Google, search 101. That and, it's interesting with any industry. I'm quite sure when you peek behind that curtain, you can keep going and then jump down the rabbit hole and keep falling. Yeah. We're still falling down the rabbit hole today. but no, it was really a matter of our passion as consumers led us through all that, mud of trying to figure out, information gathering of what do I not know? Yeah. to at least know that I got to go learn it. But if you don't even have it on your radar, then, you don't want to have that blind spot impact you if you keep going too far down.
That's a great point, because I coach a lot of entrepreneurs and I find myself asking questions. I always said I ask hard questions, and it's to get them to understand what they don't know yet. Mm-hmm. Not to make them feel bad, because that's not the goal. The goal is to say, here are the other things that could slow you down. Here are the things that could catch you off guard, that could knock you down. If you get out of line, too far out of that line, you can get hit. Right. I mean, it's with your background, it's just as hard to, when you're balancing how much you produce of something like this, it's just as hard to produce not enough as too much, especially when demand starts to take off or you get a national chain rollout or my gosh, the complexity in that. And this isn't just buy sell. You've got to actually roast the beans and blend and all those things right there. Right.
Yes, sir. So, we're a manufacturer, and that in itself is a it's a added layer of complexity. A lot of people also don't realize, what it takes to make the product that they are buying and who is making the product that they're buying. They are buying, finished goods that's packaged and, something that's recognizable for them. But there's many, many, many brands that they rely on, third party because of the capital cost of equipment to produce something. And the need to have that scalability that you kind of just referenced as well. So, businesses that are starting out, kudos to them if they have their own manufacturing capabilities, but a lot of them don't. And for us, it's super important to be vertical and own kind of each touch point of our product development. Our overall, from a product standpoint, our overall ethos is to build a portfolio of coffee and tea based beverages. But the only way to really do that with long-term integrity from our vantage point is to own the product development of it. And so, with us launching, we're launching with, the dry goods side of coffee and tea, and, also establishing our brand presence and our business model to the community. So as we do begin to innovate, those that, like, those innovations already, they have a home with a brand that stands for something. Or those that, support the brand for standing for something, they have a home to try different products by way of their their engagement with the brand already. So it's really to kind of widen, build a bigger pie by way of building brand loyalty more than just product loyalty. But being a manufacturer, that was, a very, especially early on, a defining moment when you're building a business model, especially in the modern day coffee industry. You're going to either build a shop, you're going to build a shop that roasts, or you're going to build a roastery. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to, play in the gray space between those because the economics of doing those models are very different. And so we, passed on the coffee shop model so we can have less overhead in order to put that into the business to scale it for this retailer distro environment and e-commerce environment. So it was, you have to be very conscious on when you look at your expenses that you have to put into the business, what model are you going to choose to put those dollars into, what expenses to get you to where you're trying to go?
So are you roasting and packaging here in Des Moines?
Yes, sir.
So is that your only location at this point?
Yep. So we have our corporate headquarters, our roastery, south side of Des Moines, Park Avenue, and all we do is roast, right, and package and so on and so forth. So it's not a retail place. We don't have a POS system or anything, but 10,000 square foot facility, do a pretty significant volume of pounds, per year in a shift. There's about 12 of us here now, and continuing to build, right? And so we're still early, and you look at January 1st of 2020 is when we announced our first national distribution, which was with Target. Mm-hmm. And so we're almost 11 months now, or 11 months now with being on a national stage and, you know, being able to build more distro and convert from there. And so we've been in our space as of mid-July, and gives us the runway to continue to build. So, but the intention is to, you know, have our own foundation, impact our own, you know, job market, but also to build industry pipeline for people that are interested in coffee to also have a point of access into the industry by way of the operations roasting side, not just the coffee shop side.
Sure. So not only are you in Target, they're featuring your product on commercials.
Yes.
How does that feel?
It feels awesome. I'm as silly as it sounds, and it's hard to do, but I try to normalize excitement as more points of validation, because if anyone is responsible for kind of seeing the vision of where we're going and where we intend to go is me. And, you know, they are points of validation. We are, and we knew this, hence also part of our naming convention, Black and Bold. We are on a very lonely journey in the sense of what trail has been set for us on. We launched, again, January 1st, we became the first nationally distributed Black-owned brand in coffee, which still is silly to say, because coffee's been in America for over 200 years. And it's the second highest consumed beverage in America. And what it does is it's a soundbite on the disparity of economic inclusion across industries, let alone our mainstay industries as consumers. We don't even realize how disenfranchised and left out demographics are, right? Disadvantaged demographics are. And so that's just for us, we have a long way to go. We have a huge impact that we're looking to build and make. And we also, as we continue to do that, are looking to educate and influence others on the impact they can make by being more conscious, whether that's business to business and partnerships and being that example, or as consumers on being able to have a tangible output on the decisions that they make, you know, starting the day, starting with a cup of coffee, right? It's super exciting to see, because it reinforces that we are starting to create that change and that awareness for people, and things that, you know, existed. We think about conscious consumers, I almost think shopping local, right? More so than how do you impact your local community by shopping a national brand, especially a early stage one that is talking about your community, right?
So when we talk about that, I was looking at your website, and you state on there, our founders, Purnell and Rod, created Black and Bold with the desire to make purpose popular, if I've got that stated right. They welcome the obligation to equip young people with tools to live their best lives and overcome familiar, unfortunate circumstances by turning a daily ritual, enjoying a cup of coffee or tea, into a means of giving back. How do you guys do that on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah. So the most tangible way we do it is we give 5% of our profits back to disadvantaged initiatives that support disadvantaged youth across America. But we align our pledge partners to, there's this phrase that, I can't remember. I do know, actually, the revolution must be financed, right? Mm-hmm. And so we tie our clients, you know, for purpose, reason for being, back to our pledge partners, reason for, you know, supporting, that constituency. And so when we look at, you know, hospitality, Serenity Hotel that's opening up here in Des Moines, just opened in Des Moines, we're their coffee shop provider for the hotel. We're giving that 5% of our profits back to the homeless youth initiatives across Des Moines. Right? And then for our retailer distro, we are correlating that back to workforce development. And so since we have the national stage by way of that sales channel, we've been able to add 11 pledge partners across the U.S. that are based in the markets that we have the most distribution in. Fortunately for us in our partnership with Target, our distribution was top down in the sense of population. And so we're in some of the largest markets across the pretty much all of the largest markets across the U.S. as we entered into distro. And so, being able to have that reach, but also, again, have these pledge partners that are, in L.A., they are, a nonprofit that supports conservation efforts by way of teaching, disadvantaged youth or youth that have not been a part of that ecosystem. What it means to support conservation. In Houston, there's a organization that provides laptop and tech equipment to kids that rely on free reduced lunch that don't have technology in their homes. Miami, it's coding training classes. In New York, there's urban farming classes, as well as Chicago. In Des Moines, By Degrees Foundation, which was formerly an I Have a Dream Foundation, is one of our local pledge partners, and we continue to look to build more organizations under that as we continue to scale. Right? We don't want to give everybody a dollar. Hey, we want to make sure that we bring more people on. It's a sizable enough contribution to show that we care, but ultimately having opportunities like now, sharing these examples with you, help other people be influenced by the work that they're doing by having those organizations under their radar too.
I want to go back to what you said about being the first national brand, Black-owned national brand in coffee. And yet coffee is, and tea especially, I mean, how old is tea in human society? I think thousands and thousands of years. Who knows when somebody pulled those leaves off the tea bush the first time? Exactly. I can't imagine, but it just stuns me, because what's interesting is, with coffee roasting, especially if you're small scale, it's not I need to raise $1 million. I mean, there are ways. There's a local coffee shop, I'm sure you know them, Zanzibar, been around forever, right? They got one roasting machine up front. They're a coffee shop that roasts, I take it. The entry point isn't that hard. It's hard. Any business entry point's hard, but it's not that hard. It just blows my mind that this is the first one. I hope you, and to me, there's other business environments where, you're talking about shopping local and eating mm-hmm. local, but there's creating local. And, mm-hmm. Too many things have been taken across these giant supply chains across the earth. And again, nothing wrong with that, other than I don't think people stop and add up what it costs to support a global supply chain. There are mm-hmm. significant costs to that when you talk about, I have to buy a container load. I have a startup I work with that bought 3 container loads of product and they couldn't sell it. I mean, mm-hmm. now we have 3 container loads of product. So I have to say that really, really stunned me. So also in Whole Foods. You're also in Hy-Vee. What interests me with your purpose statement is you're at different economic points in the strata of the economies, because Whole Foods is, let's face it, they're nicknamed Whole Paycheck for a reason. They are not cheap to go into. So unless, versus Hy-Vee and Target, which are at a low mid. So
yep.
Tell me a little bit about how you got into Whole Foods, because it looked like you're not just in one, and a little bit about Hy-Vee, because I think it's interesting to hear that story.
Yeah, to your point, when you then put on, understanding the retailer landscape and the putting that lens on, there's a lot of dichotomy amongst a Target experience versus a Walmart versus a Hy-Vee versus a Whole Foods. So on and so forth, right? The one constant within all of that is those stores have consumers that drink coffee and they happen to offer. It's a matter of what, at what price, what do those consumers expect? And, based off of that and what they don't expect or what they haven't purchased, why not? And is it a matter of this just isn't where they want to, or this hasn't been a part of what they have had available? And so, Whole Foods, Hy-Vee, starting with Whole Foods, very different business model than conventional grocery. I'll back up a little bit and say, when we think about these major retailers, right, and then we think about other retail stores that just may be local grocery stores that we don't know outside of our own markets or neighborhoods, these organizations become as massive as they are for a reason, right? They have a point of difference somewhere, whether it's the structure of the organization, their business economics, there's something, right? And then they ultimately become even more of who they are or they where they got them there. And so for Whole Foods, they built a reputation of high quality proposition, requirements across their suppliers, but also being hyper local no matter where they're located. And so that's evolved a bit. Amazon owns Whole Foods now. They've streamlined some of their processes, but overall, and let's say back in the day, pre-Amazon, you can walk to a Whole Foods, build a relationship with that store, and they would look to carry your brand because they know the connectivity to the community. The streamlining process is that's more regionalized now. And so as we launched, and this is kind of our story as a whole, as we launched our brand 2.5 years ago, we knew where we wanted to take it to in a sense of e-commerce and retailer distro and other channels beyond that. But we self-funded and launched the business out of the garage. And so it was all validation points as we continued to quickly move up, the growth stages operationally. And so our packaging wasn't where it needed to be. We didn't have barcodes, we didn't have UPCs, we didn't have what we knew would need to be on a shelf. And so, once we got there, then it was a matter of, how do we enter into, what's the starting point of entering into? Much longer lead time with Target. That conversation was well ahead of the redesign. Target actually kind of shared a lot of feedback on the sense of where we were going on our redesign for retail. And for Whole Foods, it was a matter of, hey, local store, we have an opportunity that we want to learn more about. How do we start it with you all, with being a local brand? And they're like, well, it's not us. Those guys in Chicago, reach out to them. And we were fortunate to have had the redesign and everything ready by then. And just got on board with them. They, you know what? We love what you're doing. We can work with some of the Chicago stores because that's considered local still to get them interested. And you all can work with the local Iowa store to get them on board, and then we'll start from there. And so that ultimately, that conversation was probably in January, and that ultimately ended up the product on the shelf come late March, April. Even though the pandemic had shown its face and those stores were trying to figure everything out, the one telling sign in a great way was them still thinking about local solutions to their COVID problem. You think about bulk coffee, right? And you got the grinder machine, you got these big clunky things. So part of the first reaction that many grocers had, but Whole Foods in particular, they've removed all of that stuff out just from a safety and sanitary standpoint. And what did it do? Leave a gap, and it left an opportunity for them to enter a new brand that they were hoping to bring in. And so we basically started with the Midwest, Illinois, Iowa, Nebraska, and continuing to expand in other Midwest states. To have been in a stuck place that early with COVID and not knowing what the future held, and them still leaning in was an awesome point of validation too.
Yeah, it really was. It's interesting because there have been some companies that found a silver lining in COVID, and for all the horror it's launched on the earth. But it's interesting because a lot of us shopped our grocery stores more, and we shopped for new experiences. So if you were me who went and got his morning, well, I used to drink coffee, now I drink tea, my morning tea at Starbucks, and I like that experience, and we talk about a brand that built an experience that's different, I'm buying my tea online now, right? And not haven't bought yours yet, Will, promise. But we were stopping in the grocery store and looking at new products. My wife and I, we're looking at new products. So I think in a way it also, people were open to new ideas, and yeah. Certainly the other things that have gone on this year have opened us to other new areas as well. But I do think there had to have been a silver lining there for you with COVID. I hadn't thought about the idea of those shelf space opening up because of the bulk coffee distribution, because shelf space is just priceless. I mean, it's, oh my gosh, priceless.
You got it. They see you got to, you know, shelf space is, you got to turn enough in sales to basically pay for the rent that you're borrowing on for that space.
That's right.
Right. And, you know, if you're not turning enough, you're not able to pay the rent to borrow the space. Exactly.
Yeah.
And
yeah, your lease is over.
Exactly. Exactly.
So, yeah. So what's next for Black and Bold? When you look out, and I know it's hard right now with all that's going on in our world, but tell me what you see in the next year or two.
For sure. There's this. Most important for us is continue to diversify, the way we go to market. Coffee is about as commodity and conventional as it comes in a sense of access. And, for our vantage point, the easiest thing we can do is provide the product to have access to the better quality experience of coffee, to bring coffee drinkers and tea drinkers closer to understanding what they're drinking, which will by default form a new level of appreciation to something that they've have, a ritual around. You know, those that have a favorite drink and you're talking to a bartender and they give you a fun fact about that drink, you feel that much more loyal. Right? If you have a wine or whether it's mid shelf or top shelf from a wine standpoint, if someone gave you a nugget of information around that wine, you appreciate it that much more. And coffee, it's a delicate, harvested crop, right? That, has its own stories, own origins, and their own nuanced flavors that people don't realize, or get to experience if they're not drinking the level of quality that allows for that. But so for us, it's continue to diversify, our access points. We have retail distro partners. We're not looking to sell to every shelf. It's really a matter of the partnerships that allow us to provide not only access to our products, but also shared values on this domestic impact side. And, from retailer shelves to whether it's, again, hospitality to food service as well. And continuing to be an example for people on how domestic impact can be tangibly done. And also, showcasing our partnerships with different businesses to shine a light on doing business with Black businesses, which I hope from anything as a takeaway on the impact of 2020 and also from a, whether it's, awareness of these social and disparities, also with economic disparities that, elevating Black businesses isn't just a moment in time, but it's a matter of how do we help people normalize the ways to do that, because end of the day, it's a disadvantaged economic group for America. And if you remove ethno naming conventions, you still have this disadvantaged economic group within America. And you can't solve that if you don't acknowledge and address it and create examples for other people to think creatively in their own boxes. So that's our goal, is to continue to build elevated partnerships, some that we don't know of today. We know of the ones we're working on. We're excited about them. but I think a big piece is to continue to be the example on how, something that's as conventional as coffee can be elevated and also do even more good, and continue to be an example for people too, how they can. So I don't intend us to be this, billion-dollar company overnight. We're selling a widget that has overhead and capital requirements. As we continue to make our financial contributions, the goal is to, be the example for businesses to, look internally to themselves, and entrepreneurs or future entrepreneurs to look internally to themselves on how to be relevant with the demographic that you serve, whether you're impact to them or impact to a subgroup or community that ultimately becomes them, right? So you invest in the community of your consumer and the sustainability of them, that should bode well for you and the sustainability of your business too.
It very much should. Well, we're kind of coming to the end of our time here today, and I don't want to take too much more your time because I know how busy you are right now. First of all, congratulations on the massive amount of success you have had and continue to have. And we will definitely work on our side of promoting this podcast out there for more people to learn about what you are doing. So Purnell, Cesar, thank you for being on Startup Stories. I really appreciate it.
For sure. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate you having me, man.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business and Startup Stories DSM podcast. Inspired by these stories, we offer a hub full of resources needed for any small business owner to grow and succeed in Greater Des Moines, Iowa at dsmpartnership.com/smallbusiness. Thanks for listening.